Brew Strong is brought to you by Blickman Engineering, home of the Riptide. Visit them online at blickmanengineering.com.
Brewers, it's time for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Welcome to Brew Strong. We are live from Homebrew Con in Providence, Rhode Island. My good friend John Palmer's here with me.
Greetings.
That's right. I'm Justin Crosley, filling in for Jamil Zainashev, who couldn't be here. Had a family emergency to be home with. Everybody's doing okay, but we miss him. And instead, you got to listen to me. But luckily, we've got my good friend Michael Mufasa Ferguson on the program with us
today. Yes, they do. Yeah. How are you doing, y'all?
Well, the Excellent. Beauty about this, too, is that Drew Beecham and Denny Kahn are doing their podcast right across the way from us.
Yes.
And now we've got your booming voice to drown them out. You know, I needed that.
Indeed. Although my voice is quickly going away.
Yeah, you and me both, man.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's what's going to happen. And as it goes away, the register gets lower and lower and lower.
Right.
But then I Bobby Brady in the middle. It's like, hello?
Yeah, just right there. Yeah. Which is a funny noise to hear coming out of you.
Yeah. By the way. It's like my underwear got stark or something.
So, Mr. Palmer, we want to thank our wonderful sponsor, John Blickman, for supporting this show as he always does.
Yeah, indeed. He's got a lot of great new stuff over there. Got some new Anvil equipment, including the all-in-ones, which we just talked about in the previous show.
That's right. He's a smart guy. He's a good guy. It's always fun to hang out with him here, and we thank him for supporting the show for all these years now. You guys have been doing Brew Strong for 10 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
The BN's about to have its 14th anniversary party tomorrow night.
Yes.
And John Palmer and Jamil have been working for free for all that time. I can't thank you guys enough.
Any excuse to party.
Yeah. Right.
But is it really free when you're with the BN Army?
See, that's what I say.
Yeah. Is it really free? I mean, it's like you trade this
your
work
soul
for fun.
Yes,
oh, right. I see.
Well, I didn't want to get that dark, but if we're going there, I'm the darkest guy here.
You always are.
Yes. I bring shadow to the room.
Oh, my gosh. So it is always super fun to talk to you, Mufasa. And one of the reasons we wanted to bring you on is I saw that you were giving a presentation this week.
Yeah, great title.
About something that I thought is near and dear to our listeners. Over the years, we've seen a lot of our homebrew listeners go pro.
Mm-hmm.
It's always fun for me to go to the Great American Beer Festival, for example, and they come up to me and they say, hey, you know, thank you for the information. They thank John. They thank Jamil.
Right.
I'm now a pro brewer. What was, and this was part of your presentation. What was the title of your presentation?
The title of my presentation is, So You Want to Be a Pro Brewer. Are you crazy?
Yes, exactly.
And, you know,
a little tongue-in-cheek.
A little tongue-in-cheek, but there had to be...
There had to be some reality.
There had to be some reality check because, you know, with 7,500 breweries out there, 3,000 in planning,
right?
I mean, it's
competition.
It's getting... The competition is fierce.
Yeah.
Right? So I think we, you know, and like we talked about, you know, the other night, I think that we aren't in reinventing the wheel.
Yeah.
This has happened before. We've had...
Yeah.
This many breweries in this country before.
Before Prohibition.
Before Prohibition,
we were saying,
And it was very local. And so my suggestion is to go back to the roots and be local once again, you know, with Nano. And, you know, go into there. But it's you're still crazy to even want to go pro. Even work for a brewery or even set up a brewery. It's nuts.
It's a lot of hard work.
It's a lot of hard work. And if you don't do your homework, just take your money... Go to the nearest toilet and flush it down.
Right. Right. Don't waste your time or
your
money.
Don't waste your time or your money. You know, I mean, it's like, hey, there, it's off my, it's out of my pocket, it's off my chest.
Well, and before we even get into the do's and don'ts, I think it's important to talk about turning your hobby into your profession in general. People ask me all the time, it's kind of a running joke, that I don't really brew anymore and I don't homebrew.
Same
but
here.
If I'm honest about it, you know, when I have a day off, now that I made my hobby my job, I kind of want to go do something else. In other words, your hobby will lose some of its luster when it becomes your profession.
It always does. I know many a chef who's a vegetarian.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Okay. Right.
Yeah. You know, when I worked for IBM, I wanted nothing to do with computers.
Yeah.
Afterwards.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So I mean, I understand that completely. I loved brewing. You know, I mean, it was. I fell into it backwards. It was an accident. I responded to a job for an engineer.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. And it turned out to be Dan Gordon in, you know, the Palo Alto Brewery, GB1.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
And it was like, why haven't I been doing this all my life?
Yeah.
You know, hardest job I've ever worked. Right. But why haven't I been doing this all my life? Plus, I was buff. I was buff. You could bounce a bowling ball off my abs.
Wow.
I mean, I traded in that six-pack for
checks.
A keg.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know?
Over the years.
Over the years. But, yeah. It was like I had to be doing this. I had to do it. And that's really the only reason to even get into brewing is if you feel that you have to brew,
yeah.
What else are you going to do?
Then you should.
Yeah. Then you should.
But I think it was even Jamil. He's going to hate me, especially if I'm wrong. But I think I can remember Jamil back in the day as a home brewer. And everyone was like, you should go pro. Your beer's so good. You're the most award-winning brewer.
I told him that myself.
I think I remember him saying, why would I want to ruin a good hobby?
Yeah.
And then sure enough, he eventually ruined a good hobby and started his own brewery.
But he's very successful.
He is, but I think that you have to be aware of that trade-off. And maybe I'm saying something that's relatively obvious, but I don't think you really know the trade-off until you do it.
No, you don't. And that's why I suggest to people, it's like intern, go work for the man for a while, you know, just to see how hard the job is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? Now, and it's not to say that you don't still love beer and brewing.
Oh, yeah.
And I still, you know, whenever I do finally sit down and homebrew, I am reminded how much I love it. I do have a good time. But like I said, if I got a day off, I'm like, I'm going to go have some wine. I'm going to go hiking. I'm going to do something other than beer because it's because day in and day out.
That's what you do. And I understand that completely.
Yeah.
Now that I'm beer adjacent,
it's
a little bit more attractive again.
That makes sense, yeah.
You know,
what are you doing now, Mufasa?
Now I work for Taprite and Albert's Dispense Technologies Company. And I'm the director of business growth, business development. Yep. And so basically I'm on the beer side, but we do soda and everything. And
is Taprite a dispensing company, essentially?
It's a dispensing company. I mean, we're known for our regulators, right? 70% of the regulators out there are probably ours.
I see.
You know, however, and they may be rebranded, but they're still ours. However, we've gotten into the point where we make everything from keg spear to the faucet.
Okay.
Okay, right.
Including the faucet.
Including the faucet, okay.
Yeah. So,
Taprite.com, if anyone wants to check it out.
Taprite.com.
New product idea.
AlbertsDispense.com.
Mufaucet.
A Mufaucet.
Oh.
How did Palmer come up with that before you, Mufaucet?
What?
Oh, my God.
Hey, it's mine now. Okay. Sorry. It's mine.
Fair enough.
The biggest, blackest faucet you've ever seen in your life.
And we actually have this black...
That black stainless steel?
Yeah.
On the Mufaucet.
The Mufaucet.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, baby.
Homer, how come you don't do this marketing for me?
It will have to get just a bit longer, but it's perfect.
It's got
to
be the right blood alcohol level.
It's a little longer. Oh, my God. That's the tagline. The Mufaucet.
The Mufaucet.
It's a little longer.
It's a little longer.
Because it has to be.
And the beer is deep, too.
That is fucking ridiculous. We're gonna take a quick break right now because we got to write down some ideas. Hang in there. You're listening to Brew Strong live from HomebrewCon.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. go to your happy price, Priceline.
Are you looking for a simple brewing system that's great for all grain brewing, but everything on the market seems to be full of compromises? Blickman Engineering has the answer. The Blickman Brew Easy All Grain Brewing System. The Brew Easy is a complete system with easy upgrades and a beautiful compact design, perfect for any size brewing location. At its core, the Brew Easy is built on two gorgeous Blickman Boilermaker brew kettles, a high temperature March pump, and either a top tier gas burner or the new boil coil electric heater. The Brew Easy adapter lid allows the pots to stack on top of each other, forming an efficient, strong, and compact brewing setup that comes in 5, 10, and 20-gallon batch sizes. Upgrade your BrewEasy system with full automated control by adding a Blickman Tower of Power temp controller and make moving around easy with the Blickman Kettle Cart. The BrewEasy is modular. If you already own a Boilermaker kettle, you can build your BrewEasy by purchasing just the modules you need. The new BrewEasy all-grain brewing system. See it today at BlickmanEngineering.com and brew with Blickman quality on your new BrewEasy.
Welcome back to Brew Strong, live from the floor of Homebrew Con. We're having a good time hanging out with Mufasa, inventing new products as we go.
That's right.
Absolutely.
All right. So back to the task at hand here, Mufasa. The topic that you gave a presentation about is going pro. And I think what a little tongue-in-cheek on the title. Mm-hmm. But what you were, I think, going for is maybe some do's and don'ts. If you're going to do this, this is what you should know.
Absolutely.
Can you give us a little rundown of it?
Well, first of all, you need to know everything about the market. If you don't know what's going on in the market, then you're going in blind. You might as well just, like,
good point, yeah.
You know, stumble over a cliff and end it now.
Sure.
You need to know what area you're going to go into. You need to look at demographics because it's not simple anymore. It's not like you're going to open up a brewery and they're going to rush to you because you're building a better mousetrap.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have one of the best beers in the country and never, ever see an award.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, and this we mentioned this with Jamil. You know, all your friends might say, you make such good beer, you should be pro. You should be pro. Okay, but once you go pro, let's be honest for a second, nobody gives a shit.
No.
It doesn't, you know, it does matter how good of a brewer you are, but your friends are not the audience at large, so you need to know the market.
You need to know the market, so you have to do your demographic search. You have to know the age group that's going to be in your area. You have to know who has the money.
Okay.
You have to know what audience to target, and people even consider that when they're opening up a brewery.
Yeah.
Who's your target audience? Now, I know some people that go in straight with a target audience. The metal brewers that are out there, there's a number of them. I know there's got to be like about 100 metal breweries out there now. You know, they're Pantera.
We're talking metal music. Yeah.
Metal music. Oh, okay. Yeah. Right. And stuff like that.
Love it.
And they have these like really brashy beers. In fact, the name of this particular brewery is called Brash.
Yeah.
And Vince Mandeville from St. Arnold's fame.
Okay.
And he's got like all these beautiful old-time arcade machines.
Yeah.
You know, stand-up arcade machines.
Right, nice. Right.
And they do rage yoga on Saturday mornings.
As in rage against the machine?
As in...
You're actually raging.
Yeah. So I understand that it's very cathartic and very therapeutic.
Sure.
You know.
And but they found a thing.
They found a thing. They found a niche. They know their audience. They cater to that audience.
Yeah.
All right. And if you're going to just set up a brewery somewhere in some suburb and you don't know who your target audience is, you may get lucky.
Yeah.
But you're throwing darts with a blindfold on.
Yeah. I had a nice conversation with Tom McCormick, the president of the California Brewers Guild.
Oh yes.
A few years back, and so the Brewing Network opened a bar about 5 years ago, actually next month, called the Hop Grenade. But back at that time, I had to kind of make a decision: do I want to open a brewery or do I want to open a bar? And I knew that the Brewing Network should expand into something.
Right.
I chose a bar because we interview brewers for a living; they're all our friends, and I thought, why compete? I'll just sell everybody's beer. But Tom brought up this good point about our brand in the Brewing Network, and he said, I don't recommend that anybody open a brewery anymore if they don't have a story, if they don't have something behind them that people can relate to.
Right.
And what he was saying was that the Brewing Network probably would have done fine as a
brewery.
It
has a story. Yeah.
We had a story.
Yes.
But he was very adamant that you know, that the market is as such that if you don't stand out with something that people can relate to, you're like you said earlier, you just give me your money now. Just hand it to me, and I'll take it.
And I'll take it, and then you can go home.
So you're kind of advocating the same thing. You've got to know your market, but you have to relate to your market.
You have to relate to your audience. The slide said know your audience, and you have to know that. Yeah. You're moving into a town. I mean, metropolitan areas are saturated, except in some places. I mean,
some parts of the country.
Yeah, you can still go into Houston probably. I mean, the metropolitan area is 5 million people. There's 55 breweries there. You probably you know, I mean, San Diego has less people than 150 breweries, right?
Right. So, yeah, good point.
So, I mean, so there's still places where you could put it in, but you do need a concept.
Yeah.
Right? And you need customer service.
There's I wish I could remember the name, but there's a little brewery in Portland. Okay, Portland just sounds like an awful place to open a brewery now, right? Because like San Diego, they're saturated. But they're just specializing in German beer. Okay, now it doesn't sound like a niche, right?
Right.
Okay,
but it is.
But in Portland, it is. Mm-hmm. And they are killing a Kolsch, and they're killing a Pilsner, and they're killing a Helles. And I go there because
of that. My favorite beers.
right? Yeah. But because of that, even though that's a very traditional style, that you're not reinventing the wheel, they stand out in Portland because of it.
Yes. Right.
And they're winning awards for these things. Mm-hmm. So you also have to be good at what you do.
You have to be good at what you do. And that's what made Gordon Biersch stand out. You know, and I started with Gordon Biersch. So I refer to myself as a lager lad.
Yeah.
I was one of the original lager lads because everybody was making ales. Lagers took a little bit too much TLC, a little bit too much time in the tank, and you know, rotations were hard to do.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. But they're still like my favorite beers to drink.
The
drinkability of the German style lagers and the Kolsch, which is an ale but tastes like a lager. The drinkability of those beers is unbeatable.
Of course. The craft brewers are doing that well. Maybe they have the time to let that sit in the tank. Again, they've gotten better.
Yes.
Okay, so know your market. What's next, Mufasa?
Okay, you also have to know the local laws. Now, and the reason I say that is because there's so many things that can go wrong. In certain states and counties, you have to have enough parking space to actually open the business.
Right.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so if you don't have the right number of parking spaces,
you can't open.
You can't open.
Yeah.
Right? So you need to know that before you go in and buy something and then just find out that, you know, that law is going to bite you in the butt. Or how about the BJ's did? They opened up a brewery in Webster, and their hub and spoke system they were going to do is like, we open up a brewery, then we take our beer to the restaurants.
Yeah.
Well, you couldn't do that in Texas at the time.
I see.
They didn't know that.
Yeah.
They should have known that, but they didn't. Got around it, you know, they were big enough to survive that sort of thing. Went into Louisville, didn't use a lawyer. It was a dry county.
Oh my God. You're kidding me.
Right. No. So I mean these things you really have to go in. I mean, people have already made these mistakes. So you have to learn from the history, right?
Right.
I'm so relieved to hear you say that a company of that size has made these mistakes.
Yeah.
I've done it too. And we had a guest on. I'll talk about them in a second. But even with the hop grenade, so we opened up a hop grenade in Fort Collins, Colorado. Now, our bar model is to be a tap room and a bottle shop. And in California, that means you can buy bottles of beer to go.
Right.
You know, a bit like a liquor store. But you can have them on premise, or you can take them to go. And I thought, so here we are. I picked Fort Collins. We have the sign made up, hop grenade, tap room, and bottle shop. Guess what? You can't buy beer to go in Fort Collins, Colorado. I fucked that up. I built my cold box to have built-in glass doors full of bottles because I thought you could take beer to go. I did not pay attention to enough of the details. Now, of course, we still sell bottles on site.
Right.
But it's a fraction of sales, and I wasted a bunch of cold box space by not looking up that law.
Right. And these are things. You got to know all this stuff.
Wow. Yeah.
If you go to the website, look up, you know, my presentation, there'll be a checklist of stuff that you just need to look into. There's so many things.
What's that website we're going to?
We're going to the AHA website, right? Is that
where the list? Yeah, the AHA does it. The BA does it as well.
So make sure that you check that out. But another thing, water restrictions. People don't. This is why I suggest like nano breweries, because what you put down the drain could piss off a county.
That's right.
I've been monitored in Oxnard. They put monitors on us, man, and we had to like watch everything we did. And it cost us a whole bunch of money to pre-neutralize before things went down the drain. They didn't want you killing off the bacteria. They also didn't want you feeding the bacteria.
Right.
So when you dump yeast down there, that's food for the bacteria.
This is an excellent detail because some municipalities don't care.
Yeah.
And others will be the most stickler you've ever seen.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, we've talked to brewers about that over the years.
Surcharges and all the rest, yeah.
Yeah, and then another thing you have to worry about is the health department.
Oh, yeah.
The health department, I've been Barley's Casino and Brewing Company, and I have copper drag chains in mine, but I was grandfathered in. Dave Otto, who was at the time the head brewer over at Big Dogs, he ordered a you know, a brew frame with copper on the outside.
Okay.
Well, the law changed, and he couldn't have copper. And he goes, it's on the outside. They said, doesn't matter. Something might spill on the outside and drip back in.
Okay.
You know, I mean, just they know not about beer, right?
Right.
But that doesn't stop them from enforcing it. He had to sandblast the copper off all his kettles.
Wow.
Ouch.
So now here's the thing. We on this show, or you as a business owner, now you can spend time being annoyed at how ridiculous that is.
Right.
But it's a waste of your fucking time.
Absolutely.
What you really ought to do is just pay attention and get it done.
That's it, exactly. You can't go in blind.
Yeah.
You know, and especially now.
Yeah.
You can't go in blind. The competition is fierce. Yes, there's a lot of bad beer out there, and I hate to say it.
Yeah, it's okay. We know.
There's a lot of crap out there.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, crappy beer doesn't immediately shut you down. There is one case.
That's true.
is one case that I know of personally that maybe lasted 3 months. That was... I won't talk about it because the guy has since passed. But... The enormity of the situation now is, if you have good beer, you still might not be recognized.
That's right.
And bad beer, it's like if a high tide raises all boats, a low tide makes everybody smell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so if there's a lot of bad beer out there now, it's affecting you because people are saying, well, that's what craft beer is.
Yeah.
It stinks. It sucks.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, exactly. I was a musician for years, and we would always talk amongst our musician friends that there are bands out there, there are artists out there that belong at the top of the chart.
Absolutely.
And they will never see the
light
of day.
They'll never get there.
And so I think your point is well taken when you say, you know, you might make wonderful beer, and I hope you do.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean success even then.
Not even close.
Right.
And then I want to put a finer point before we move on to the topic again about knowing your laws. Sometimes the laws seem obvious, and you still better look them up.
Yes.
We had a brewery on the show not too long ago that opened up a brewery in Chico, California, home of Sierra Nevada.
Yes.
It would seem obvious that since it's the home of one of the largest craft breweries in the world, that they can open a brewery and have a tap room on site.
Right.
Turned out they couldn't. They got the building. They got the funding. They started building. And because they didn't have a restaurant, they could not sell beer out of their tap room.
No. Right. And that was that 15 barrel that went in up there, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I'm with him. I'm thinking, Nevada town.
Absolutely.
They had to go back. It delayed their opening by I don't know how many months. They had to get the law changed so that the law would allow them to serve beer over the counter at their tap room that did not have a restaurant.
Yeah, and a lot of these breweries are going to benefit from people that do that. Like Freetail, you know, spearheaded the whole self-distribution thing in Texas.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Without them, you know, we might not have the laws that have been changing rapidly down there. Now, that'll just beer to go.
Yep.
You could even get delivery beer.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure. Sam Calagione did this in Delaware. Garrett Marrero did it in Maui. So it's not to say that you can't change things,
no.
But that's a tough road to hoe.
Right. And really what you need to do is pay attention to the laws and hope that people like Garrett, you know, and Sam are leading the way to help you advance. Because these guys, they have good names. You know their product, you know their reputations, and they're going to be the ones that when you put their name on something, it's going to probably push things through faster than putting, you know, Mufasa on it. And there's, oh, I love the Lion King, get out.
All right, what's next? So I got to know my market, I got to know my laws. What's next?
Okay, the other thing is, this is something that I'm sad to say that a lot of people go in without recognizing, and that is the rule of thumb, 2 years operating capital.
Okay.
Because your general success rate is going to be beyond a year.
Okay.
Okay.
And
yeah,
you have
sense.
To have you have to have 2 years of operating capital to move forward.
And here's what's scary about that. That's a lot of money, Mufasa.
It's too much money for most people.
Yeah, I can hear our listeners right now going, well, cringing. I'm ambitious. I want to open this, but fuck that. I don't have 2 years of capital.
And then a lot of people will open anyway, and then they'll have that issue of 9 months to a year from now where they can't pay paychecks because something happened. A drought happened. A tornado tore their roof off.
Oh, man, yeah.
Right.
You know, and all of a sudden they're like, okay, we're done.
Right.
All right? And so you got to make sure that every little detail is lined up.
So when you're fundraising, you know, it's easy to hear these kind of sexy success stories where the, you know, a guy starts in his garage and he bootstraps his company and everything goes just right. That's really not what generally happens.
Buffalo Bill, Matty. I mean, he brewed in a bathtub.
Yeah. You know? But those are unicorns. And
yes.
So you should actually not plan to be the unicorn. You should plan to be the failure.
That's why you got to have 2 years operating capital. And if you don't need it, fine.
Yeah.
That's right? Well,
yeah, then what did that hurt?
All right. And you can pay it back and everybody's okay, cool.
Yeah.
But you have to be prepared. Yeah. If you want to be successful, you have to be prepared for failures. I mean, how many breweries flooded over the last couple of years?
Yeah.
And they didn't have sufficient insurance.
Yeah.
You know, tornadoes have acted up. I mean, obviously, there's climate change, but no politician is willing to admit that. So we're going to have to be dealing with this off into the future. And you have to be prepared for these things.
I was talking to Vinny Chilurzo about that recently.
Vinny, how's he doing, man? I haven't seen him forever.
They just opened a new brewery in Windsor.
I knew that.
And they're doing fine. But he was bringing up, you know, there were the fires in Sonoma County a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Right.
And their economy in that area, and those of you tourists who like wine and like beer, I'm speaking to you on behalf of them, has still not recovered from that.
No.
It was a large tourist economy there, and it still hasn't recovered because people think of it as a war zone or whatever.
Right.
But the point Vinny actually was making is the point you're making now, is that when we make our business plans, we don't really account for natural disaster. But
you should.
It happens.
Yes.
And as you're saying, almost it seems like more frequently.
Oh, it's definitely more frequently.
And some ways you can't make contingency plans for everything.
No.
But you should. I don't know if it's on the insurance side, and I don't know if it's on the fundraising
the insurance
side.
It's on the fundraising side. It's on the location side.
Yeah.
I bought my house at the highest point in Houston, 33 feet above sea level.
That's the highest point. Yeah.
Highest natural point.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
All right. 33 feet above sea level. During Harvey, it came up.
To your doorstep?
Up the driveway. No, we got lucky.
Okay.
Came up the driveway. Another 2 feet, it might have gotten to the gate.
Yeah.
But my selling factor for my house is we didn't flood in Harvey.
Right.
And I still pay only $450 a year for flood insurance.
Right.
Because of that, yeah.
And again, you can't plan for everything, so we're not trying to say everything's foolproof, but you got to think about these things.
You have to think about these things. The more concrete we put down, the more water is going to flow into your house or your place of business.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, that's all there is to it. The more that you're going to get bears coming out and digging through your garbage, the more you're going to get deers jumping through your plate glass windows.
Sure.
Right.
So, I mean, this is just the sort of thing that is going to happen. You can't plan for that stuff, but you really need to be perhaps a bit overinsured.
Yeah.
You know, and that takes more money, too.
Yeah.
Right? So, it always comes down to money, doesn't it? But if you're going to do this, you need to be
aware
of what it's going to cost you.
Yes.
And what it could cost you. And you have to be prepared for that. That's why the 2 years operating capital. Yeah. And that's just a rule of thumb. That's just a general business rule of thumb for small businesses.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah. Now, some of you young men and women out there who are just out of school and you don't have a family yet, obviously your threshold for risk is a little larger. But most of the homebrewers I know, we're talking about their second or third career here.
Right.
So they've got a family to think about. Don't put that all on the line and risk everything you've already built.
And risk everything you already built. And this is, but some people are going to do that.
Yeah.
I talked to I was surprised at how many people actually came to the talk. They put me in the big room.
Yeah.
And,
I believe it.
And it was almost full.
Yeah.
It was like, what?
Yeah.
You know, 9 o'clock in the morning. Didn't you guys drink last night?
Right. Lucky you showed up.
I know. It's like, hey, I'm only sweating from a day and a half ago, you know. But, so a lot of people there, and they were like, you know, some of them, like this last guy that walked up to me, he goes, hey, you talked me out of it.
Okay.
Yeah. You talked me out of it.
And that was a compliment, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, but other people came up and said, you talked me into it.
Yeah.
Because,
good.
You know, because half the stuff you said I had checked off, and now the other half I'm going to check off. Right? And so, I mean, as long as you go
in
into
eyes
it,
wide open,
eyes wide open, and that's the exact term I use. As long as you go in with eyes wide open, and you are perfectly willing to lose your shirt.
Yeah.
And your wife.
Right.
You know, and another point, I remember going over to the island of Honolulu and opening up a Gordon Biersch.
Mm-hmm.
And my girlfriend at the time, like, called me up. Yes, I had the 5,000 mile whip called the Motorola flip phone, and Dan Gordon kept whipping me with it.
Yeah.
Push the button. Start it. Push the button.
Get back to work. You know?
But just so she calls me up and she goes, I'm going to throw your stuff out on the lawn if you don't get home soon.
It's like, my gosh.
I'll get Dan Gordon to buy me new stuff. No, I didn't know if Dan Gordon was going to buy me new stuff.
That's right. But you were committed to this craft.
I was committed to this craft, and she understood at that point that if it came down to a choice, it wasn't her.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so you have to make these deals with the devil. I mean, not all spouses are cut out to be, you know, the mate of a brewer.
Yeah. Right, right.
Male or female. It doesn't really matter because you are married to that brewery. At least for when I got to Barley's Casino and Brewing Company in Nevada, I was pretty much 24/7 for a year.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, I mean, anything that went wrong, they called me because it was a 24/7 bar.
Yeah.
You
know, so if something went wrong 3 o'clock in the morning, they're like, hey, you know, we can't get this going. It's like, I'll see you in a bit. I only live 2 blocks away for that reason.
Yeah. You know? Well, and so similar to starting the Brewing Network, and I went against a lot of this advice you're giving right now. But I was young. I was single, not married anyway.
Right.
I didn't own a house. I was renting. I didn't have a whole lot to lose.
Sure.
But by the time, you know, I racked up that credit card debt.
I
luckily had a girlfriend at the time that supported me and thought that she liked being connected to an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. She found the life exciting as well. But look, man, we almost threw in the towel 5 years into it. I was broke. The credit card debt was racked up. The sponsors were not signing up. I said, look, we're going to give this one last shot. We're going to go to the Great American Beer Festival again. And I told everybody who was working with me at the time, if nothing happens at that festival, when we come home, we're closing up shop.
We're done.
And you know what? Just by some stroke of luck, sponsors started knocking on the door and saying, we'll be a part of this. But this is a luck story.
That you know, it is and it isn't, because the entrepreneurial spirit seems to attract luck. So is it really luck?
Okay, I hear you.
All right.
Yeah.
Perseverance.
Your perseverance, you could have closed up the first time.
Yeah.
BJ's almost went bankrupt twice.
Okay.
In their early years.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. But they didn't.
Yeah.
Right? And one of the big mottos, it's like, you'd be amazed at how much effect a small group of people can make on history.
Yeah.
In fact, that's almost always the way it's ever been.
Right, right.
All right? So you go into it knowing that it's a chance.
Yeah.
You know, but you're going into it feet first, fully committed.
Yeah.
All right? And committed could be, take it any way you want.
That's right. Is this part of your do's and don'ts, that you got to be fully committed?
You got to be fully committed. If you're not fully committed, just once again, give me your money now. Stack it right here.
Yeah. You got to be all in on this.
I got better uses for it than you do. You know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You have to be fully committed. If you're not fully committed, and you're only half-assed, you know, then you're also half slow.
Yeah. Okay, so that's one. I guess that's a place I'll pat myself and the team at the Brewing Network on the back. Everyone was always all in. Everyone was this is what we want to do.
But also, you have to face this fact, too. You are an incredibly charismatic guy.
Thank you, sir.
You know, with wild, staring eyes.
I'm crazy-eyed, for
sure. Yeah, you're crazy-eyed. Like, I don't even know how women date you. They should know that. Yeah. There should be, like, a crazy-eye monitor. Ooh, he's got it.
Yeah, that perpetual nativity.
Yeah. Okay, but so maybe this is something that is in your do's and don'ts, too. You got to know yourself well enough to know if you're going into the right field.
You have to be honest with yourself.
And I think I knew that about me, that I could go, all right, crazy or not, I'm going to go down this road.
Yeah.
And you have to know these. You got to know your skills. Maybe you're a good brewer, but your skills are more in the back office running the business.
Absolutely.
So you got to recognize these things, too, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. You certainly do. I mean, I was actually an excellent brewer. However, I'm a better manager.
Yeah.
I'm a better teacher.
Yeah.
You know?
I think you got to know these things. It's why I quit music. I was never going to be a rock star.
Oh, I quit too.
You know?
I was a bass player.
Oh.
I'm tall and black. I had to be.
But I bet you're like me. I loved it.
Yes.
I wanted it more than anything. I wanted a career in music. But I had to one day say, you know what? It's not quite in your skill set to be that kind of a professional.
Right. I sold my Sun 200S amp, my JBL speakers, and my fully blonde, Fender bass.
Sweet.
You know, it was like, okay, so, see, I got a keyboard left so I could, tinkle.
Yeah. Same. I still got my guitar in the corner.
All right.
But you got to know your skill set.
Sure.
Vinny's a good example of this.
Mm-hmm.
His skill set's in that goddamn brewery.
Absolutely.
And every day he's in the brewery. I meet other brewers who they start out as a great brewer and their skill set becomes a manager, like
right.
you said.
But not every, first of all, most brewers
are not business people.
Yeah.
They are not business people.
And know that
too. They're not managers. And managing brewers is like herding cats.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So it becomes a very difficult thing to do. And I had a steep learning curve when I got to BJ's.
Okay.
It was easier at Gordon Biersch, and it was easier at Station Casinos. But when I got to BJ's, you had all these pretty much shoot from the hip brewers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, out there. And they're like, you know, why should I listen to you? Who the hell are you?
Right.
You know, and it's like, oh, okay, it's going to be like this, is it?
Yeah.
All right. And it took 2 years, you know, and then one time, you know, Alex just called myself and Owen into the office and said, you two better get it together. You're both out of here.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
Get your shit together.
Yeah. So, okay. And then, you know what? We reeled it in. We reined it in. We were successful. But, you know, you have to believe in yourself that you could do it.
Yeah.
Yep. It would have been easy to just say, okay, see ya. I'm going back to Vegas. They offered me $20,000 not to leave, you know, so I can go back there, you know, and boom.
Sure.
But I knew that I had really hit the ceiling there as far as, you know, as far as, you know, how far up the pole I could go there.
Okay. Right.
But I had a much taller, you know, ceiling at BJ's.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I not only did it, I pass up the $20,000 that they offered me to go higher, but I also took a $20,000 cut in pay to go there.
Sure.
However, my wife wanted out of Las Vegas.
There
and... So that meant I wanted out of Las Vegas.
Right. There are these exterior benefits.
Absolutely. You know, and I have to admit, I married up. You know, she's smart. She's got, I don't know, 4 degrees, 4 certifications, speaks 4 languages. Her plan for retirement is to speak a 5th and 6th language.
Oh, my gosh. Now I feel like more of a knucklehead over here.
She's Canadian, you know.
So she's kind. So part of what I like about what you're saying, we haven't touched on this, is I keep talking about being an entrepreneur and being a brewery owner.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't the all-encompassing part of your talk. Maybe I just want to go work at a brewery
and
be a brewer.
And that was how I started.
Okay.
I said, first of all, if you're going to get into this business, you need to know what it's about.
Okay.
Yeah.
So either go work for the man.
All right.
Or intern.
Yeah.
Right. I've had 18 interns. Only 3 went into brewing.
Wow.
No. Okay.
I've had, I don't know, 50, 60, 70 trainees.
Yeah.
And only about half of those stayed in brewing.
Okay.
Right. So it's. So many people got there and realized, oh, this is hard work.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to, like, make recipes, and we're going to put this in there, and then we're
going
to, you know.
Sit around the table and drink.
You know, it's like, no, this it's hard work.
Yeah.
You know, you got to grain out. You got to take those smelly baskets outside. You got to do all this stuff. You got to crawl into vessels. You got to scrub stuff. You know, I tell them, even before they start, it's like, we're janitors that can cook.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And we drink a lot of coffee.
If you don't understand that, you're in the wrong place.
That's right.
And most of them didn't understand it until they worked there.
Understand this gig, and the best way to do that is to go work in it.
And every person that feels that they need to be a brewer, a pro brewer, needs to go and see what it takes to be a pro brewer.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's hard. Which is why I suggest the Nano once again.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know,
because anybody could sell 2 to 7 kegs of anything.
Sure. That's a good point.
You know, and it's real easy. Now, most places you can self-distribute. You got 1/6 barrels that you can put out there. You know, you don't have to you know, you can have a staff of one if you want.
Yeah.
You know?
Heck, you can buy a more beer system that's brewing you half a barrel of beer at a time.
Absolutely. And I showed the more beer. I showed the Blickman. I showed the SS. There was a couple of others I could have shown, but I was running out of time. Yes, but, I mean, just to let people know that there's these really fun systems out there
sure.
to brew on. You could go all electric. You could go programmable. You could do all kind of different things you want
yeah.
to make your job easier.
Yeah.
You know, but you're still talking, you know, even if you're going with a one barrel, you're still talking by the time you buy uni tanks and all that stuff and a chiller. Yeah. And, you know, grist mill and stuff like that, you're probably still talking, you know, $50,000, $60,000
right,
invested
exactly,
there.
Yeah.
Plus, you got to lease or move into somebody's, you know, existing business, which
yeah.
is what I suggest.
Yeah.
I've actually scoped out two places where I could move in a nano brewery right now.
Okay.
You know, in an existing business that has a built-in audience.
Yep.
There you go.
Yeah. Right?
This is a good point.
So, I mean, these are things easy to clean, easy to make storage, easy overhead. You could piggyback your orders on a bigger brewery. You just go up to another brewery. You know, in Houston, you go up to St. Arnold's. You go to any of the other smaller ones, you know, 11 Below or something like that, and say, hey, you're ordering grain, make it two pallets. I get your discount, and I'll buy half a pallet off you.
Sure. And by the way, in today's market, these existing breweries that didn't make it are gonna come up more and more because they're not listening to Mufasa's advice.
They're not. And the shakeout's going to happen, and this is my cautionary tale. It happened in the 90s, but
yeah.
we had a lot fewer breweries.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. There's a lot of bad beer out there.
Yeah.
All right. The audience is becoming savvier
yeah.
than they were.
Yeah.
And the search for variety is making it much more difficult for these people to have these beers. That's why a tap room is so much smarter.
Thank you.
A brewery.
I mean, yeah. I've not made a whole bunch of smart moves, but I do think that's one of them.
And that was always my case. People would ask me, it's like, when are you going to open your brewery? It's like, if I open anything, it's going to be a tap room.
Yeah. yeah.
Why add my 8 to 20 beers to the 80,000
yeah.
that are out there on the market right now?
And
right,
I think right. this is also a good point because there are a lot of different jobs in the brewing industry that you can take on. You can have a love for beer and not open a brewery. You can
Absolutely.
Open a tap room. You can start writing about beer like our friend John did. Like,
oh, I use his book as my textbook at UNLV.
Yeah. See? Yeah,
that was always a high point for me, yeah.
yeah.
Always appreciated that.
You can become a consultant. You can become a manufacturer like John Blickman. Like,
right.
Back to music. I took a music class, and this professor, it was a college music class, and he there's, you know, 150 kids in the room, and he said, raise your hand if you know a rock star. Not one of them. No, nobody. Nobody knew one. Nobody was
really.
You know, he's like, okay, that's how rare it is to become a rock star. None of you even know one, but I'm here to tell you can can have a career in music.
Yes.
You can be a studio musician. You can be a wedding band.
It's amazing how many studio musicians are out there.
And so I think that brewing is a similar thing. Of course, everybody wants yeah. the sexy, shiny Russian River Brewing Company.
Of course.
But yeah. you can still have a career in this gig. You know.
Absolutely, you could have a career in this gig. And you know what? And like, you know, as I get closer to retirement age, you know, I mean, I may look like a young buck to you.
Yeah, what are you, 45, 46
yeah, right,
now?
Yeah, right. I will be at my eligible collecting Social Security age in August.
God bless you.
Yeah. So basically, I'm looking to run a tap room or something like that. I mean, I want to get away from the daily grind of yeah. having to like produce.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
and get into something that could be real enjoyment because I know so much about beer. A lot of these brewers walking this floor here, I've forgotten more
than
10
they,
years
yeah.
ago
than they, they'll learn.
Than they'll learn. And it's just, I mean, you know, I got into this 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, I mean, this is 30 years.
Yeah.
I was a lousy home brewer back then, but I'm a much better home brewer now.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
By the way, I think it was, speaking of that, it was Mufasa who came on the show and said, extract brewing is not brewing.
Oh, man, we got a lot of blowback from that.
I know you did.
Wow.
Let's do this. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to get Mufasa's top tips of why or why not to go pro. Hang in there. You're listening to Brew Strong. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Brew Strong. We are live from Homebrew Con in Providence, Rhode Island, talking to our good friends. Always so much fun to talk to you, Mufasa. And at the break, we were just talking a little bit. I think it's important to note, we're giving you cautionary tales. We're sort of telling you like it is, right, so that you can go in this with eyes wide open.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't want to gloss over the fact that we are still in one of the best industries there is. So we don't want it to sound negative.
We don't want it to sound negative. When I was doing Beer Geeks, David Page, who was 40 years in the news industry and it was a war correspondent and interviewed all kinds of people, he was absolutely amazed,
yeah,
at how, right, nice and how cool,
yeah,
the brewing industry,
oh,
was.
Oh, yes, yeah.
He was like, is everybody like this? Is it? Yeah.
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 You so, know?
With great risk, there is great reward.
Absolutely.
As there is in this. I got invited to do a podcast conference once. They wanted me to give a presentation because I'm one of the only... people who have made a career in podcasting, I think I can count them on two hands.
Right.
You know, it's
right,
not that many. It's a tough business also. Well... I gave everyone else giving presentations there was really like hurrah, hurrah for podcasting.
Right.
I kind of got up there and told them like it was. I told everybody there who was bright-eyed and bushy-tailed about making a career sitting in their living room recording themselves,
right,
about how fucking tough it is. And I've never been invited back. but I had a number of people afterward come up to me and at least say, you know what, thanks for being real about the risks involved and how difficult it is. You really got to be good at what you do.
Yes, absolutely.
In everything.
In everything. And if you're going to make a career out of it, you have to you have to be committed. You're committed, yeah, to doing what you do.
Yeah.
Right, I mean, right, you converted your house.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
I'm committed to not having a real job. It's frankly, right, what I'm,
well,
committed,
you know what,
to. Yeah.
And I understand that. I understand that completely. I've always worked ever since I was 14. That was the youngest age you could get a work, right, permit.
Work permit. Yeah.
But before,
me too,
that,
by the way.
I mean, I mowed lawns and I remember when you could get 5 cents for a 7-Up bottle?
Yeah.
I used to collect bottles, man. I buy candy for a week.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But so I've always been committed to working.
A strong work ethic.
Yeah, strong work ethic. My father taught me that. He was the smartest man I know that ever got through the third grade.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
But he's also a chef, so what can,
sure,
I say?
Sure, you, sure, sure. So give it... In summary, what are your top tips and top do's or don'ts for someone who wants to work in this industry?
Okay. Top do's, because most of them are do's.
Yeah.
But let's start out with the stuff that's going to affect you the most. There's 7,500 breweries out there. The competition is stiff.
Right.
If you're going into a package brewery, a microbrewery, which most of the craft breweries are, the shelf space is limited.
Right.
You've got AB InBev, you've got Heineken, you've got... you know, I won't include Dubbelmark out there because I kind of like them. The fact is, they have shelf space that you'll never get.
Okay.
Right.
You will never get that.
You got to know that. And you've got to compete for that 3-foot section.
Yeah.
Right, that's left. 5 shelves, 3-foot. That's all you're going to get in most places. All right. And you're going to have to compete with everybody else out there.
Okay.
Right. All right. Right. So that's another cautionary part. The other thing is that things have really changed in the market,
okay,
right?
Yeah.
And one of the big things that has changed it is the new generations coming up. The millennials and Gen Z have a completely different way of looking at things. They're not like boomers at all.
Yeah.
Right?
So they're not committed to loyalty to any one brewery, right?
Right.
Most of the people that are going to be committed to loyalty to a brewery are going to be people closer to your age.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
And even older people like me, you know. So understand that.
Okay.
So now, the do's, what you must do is understand your audience.
Right, number one.
And while you understand your audience, you have to understand your location. Okay.
And how that affects that audience.
And how that affects that audience. And when I say location, that means everything that goes with the location: the taxes, the water district, the
right,
your ability to have year-round employment. I mean, are you going to put it where you had to close down for 3 months because of snow?
Yeah,
you know, right, that sort, right, of thing. So you have to know the location is going to be. You have to go in eyes wide open with that in mind, because if you only want to have a resort, a brewery,
yeah,
then fine,
you, yeah, can,
you can, yeah, you can do that, but you know that that's not going to, you know, pay
the rest of the year,
the, yeah, rest of the year's rent.
Yeah.
Right? So you got to make a buttload of money.
Yeah.
To survive the rest of the year. You got to squirrel away your nuts.
Sure. This is another reason, by the way, that the Brewing Network works for me. I don't need to have a yacht. I never got into this to be rich, all right?
Right.
I should have opened a brewery and sold it like Ballast Point if I wanted that, right?
Well,
but I'm happy to pay my rent and have a good gig.
Absolutely, and let's talk about Ballast Point. Constellation Brands closed down two Ballast Point locations. They poured out hundreds of gallons of barrel-aged beer.
Yeah.
They cut their plans for opening the tap
Virginia.
Room in Virginia and in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And they fired 60 sales reps.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. And they admitted that they paid too much for Ballast Point.
Yeah, if that's not a failed investment, I don't know what is.
Right. So basically what they have done now is cut off anybody doing, you know, what Golden Road has done.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, going into it to sell.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen anymore.
Right.
Now, if it does, you're not going to be getting $1 billion, I guarantee it.
No.
Yeah.
You might do all right, but those days
You might
days
do all right,
gone.
But those yeah. days are gone. It's
yeah.
over. So,
yeah. Yeah.
So know that that's going to happen.
Okay. Yeah.
The next do is... let's see. Which one should I do next?
Yeah. They're all so important.
They're all so important. Okay. We already talked about know your audience, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
yeah.
So
yep.
we did know your audience and the location and all the laws involved. The legal stuff.
The legal
you
stuff.
Need
yes.
a lawyer.
Yeah.
I know that the people talk about how bad they are and they're scumbags and they're bottom feeders. But they are a necessary evil in this.
My lawyer is my best friend right now.
Oh, you know what? Mm-hmm. I really like my lawyer.
Yeah.
Right? And so these are things you have to take into consideration. They need to go through all the laws that will affect you
yeah.
when
yeah.
you open that brewery. You need to know everything that's going to affect you.
Yeah.
Down to the parking.
That's
right. Right.
You know.
Yeah.
That's right.
Down
to
and
the
I guess,
parking.
You know, with the... Looking at the beer industry as some of the best people on earth,
right?
I think the lawyers that cater to the beverage industry
are the best yeah. lawyers on earth.
That's right.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, there's some great ones out there.
And here's another big thing that we didn't mention earlier, and that is protect your product.
Oh yes.
So many people don't protect their product, and one of the slides up there is like Secret Squirrel Society. I said there's a lot of secret squirrels up there, out there waiting to steal your nuts.
Yeah.
You know they're gonna grab your nuts. And not in a good way.
Yeah. yeah.
So the other thing you need to do is trademark your stuff. That
yeah.
will come back and bite you in the ass. If you remember at BJ's, we had a beer that we called for a little while, the beer formerly known as Tempest.
Yeah.
We were sued by a winery
okay.
that had the same name.
Okay.
No competition whatsoever.
Right. Doesn't matter, though.
Right.
But it doesn't matter. And it was better to pay them off than to go through years of litigation.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So
yeah.
that cost a buttload of money. And for a smaller company, they might not have survived that.
Yeah.
Sure.
I tried to trademark the use of Palmer in beer,
right.
and I was prevented from doing so by a winery in France. That's
wow.
a Palmer Winery, and that never heard of them.
Sure.
Wow.
But,
no, I know, but
yeah.
that's like,
and
what?
So, yeah, I cannot do a collaboration beer with Palmer on the label.
Wow.
That is, and you know, and you need to know this stuff before
yeah.
you go into it, because people are going, okay, here's my fictitious name, here's this, and then next thing you know, somebody's at your door with a cease and desist.
Yep.
Yeah.
I've been using Hop Grenade for 14 years. I'm in a trademark dispute right now with a company
really?
Who claims I shouldn't be able to use Hop Grenade. And
who used it first?
Nobody. Theirs is not Hop Grenade. It's just close to it. It has grenade in it, and it's in the alcohol industry, and they've had that trademark longer. They haven't known about me until now, and they're claiming. So at this moment, I also can't put the text Hop Grenade on a beer if I were to produce it.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so I'm saying that even – I'm putting a fine point on what you're saying, Mufasa, that even when you think it's fine – it's still not fine sometimes.
No.
You got to have a lawyer. You got to look at these things.
Exactly.
If nothing yeah. else, you got to be ready and nimble when it happens.
Absolutely.
So thank God for John over at beerlawcenter.com, who's helping me navigate this situation right now.
Absolutely. So, I mean, so that the legal part is so very important. The trademark is so very important. But you also need to audit your beer in the field.
Yeah.
Ah, yes.
And that's so many people don't do that. And... You know, I mean, how many airports have you been to where the beer tastes like crap?
Yeah.
I would not have my beer in the airport.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Just period, because they don't clean lines.
Yeah. I hear you.
I remember when we were in South Africa last year.
Oh, God.
And the guy says, oh, yeah, I never drink our beer anymore. And you were just flabbergasted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, because nobody's good. Once it leaves your brewery, you have no idea what's going on.
Sure, of course. Yeah.
All right. So you need to audit out in the field. You know, the tale I have from Gordon Biersch is driving by the Smith store down by Sunset Station, I pulled over and I saw two pallets of Gordon Biersch beer sitting out in 105 degree sun.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Right. And I went over and I touched the side. This beer is brewing.
Yeah.
You know, so I called up Dan Gordon and said, "Hey, this beer it's boiling out here. It's done. You know, we need to call this back." But whose fault is that?
Yeah.
The store is not going to take it. Doesn't matter. The store is not going to take that hit.
Right.
Right. So you really need to make sure that people are giving your beer the respect that you give it when you make it.
Yeah.
All right. So you have to go out there and, if necessary, clean your own lines. If necessary, train your own people at the retail outlet.
Right.
Yeah.
Go in there. Have a you know, give them a couple glasses, give them a T-shirt or two, and say, "Okay, this is how you're going to do this stuff. We're going to check on you."
Sure.
You know, and if you're good at it, we might give you a discount for this or something like
that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. And just make
take
sure
care of your product from your beginning product, to end.
From beginning to end, because you're otherwise the worst advertising is word of mouth.
Yeah.
And if it's bad,
it's also the best advertising.
It's also the best advertising.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, how in Hollywood they say, you know, all news, good news. You
yeah,
know,
right, right.
All
yeah.
the
yeah.
bad,
yeah,
yeah.
You not, know, not publicity. Necessarily so. Yeah.
Not necessarily so.
Yeah.
So,
right.
So when you have a bad beer out there, and either your fault or their fault,
yeah,
it's going to affect not just your brewery but everybody else, because now people are going to just throw you into that category.
Associate craft beer with maybe somebody's shit beer.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And unfortunately, there's a lot of shit beer out there.
Yeah.
So now you're going into a market where you automatically are going to be associated with some shitty beer out there.
So, and at the on the same note, have some respect for your industry.
Yes.
And don't be a part of that.
Don't be a part of it. I wish more brewers would throw away beer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed.
You know?
Agreed.
I mean, gone are the days where you can put some raspberry syrup in it and call it a sour.
Right. You know? When I listen to podcasts that don't pay attention to audio, that don't pay attention to content, I'm actually offended.
You should be.
It offends me that they have the balls to get into an industry that they didn't pay attention to. They didn't do their homework. They didn't learn how to be a professional.
Right.
And it bothers me. It offends me. And I think brewers should feel the same.
Brewers have to feel the same, and as a group of brewers, we need to defend that.
Yeah, yeah.
All right,
yeah, yeah.
It should be all of our jobs.
Yeah,
exactly.
To defend that, to make that, and it's hard to tell a brewer who's nose blind to a product that he sells.
It is hard, but necessary.
It's necessary.
Right.
You got to tell them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I tell people to do is invite in the homebrew club, which a lot of pro brewers just like ah. But invite in the homebrew club, have them critique your beers.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And I did that. I wasn't afraid.
Good.
You know, when they often told me what category to put it in, and that category won.
You know, I know a lot of bar and restaurant owners that hate Yelp. I'm not one of them. I love it. And here's why. Yes, are there maniacs out there that make reviews that are out of left field?
Yeah.
Absolutely. However, I can see a common theme when I read my reviews.
Sure.
And so if there's a common theme about slow customer service, for example, guess what I probably have?
Slow customer service.
If you go to a homebrew club and you give them your beer and there's a common theme about diacetyl or under attenuation, guess what? You're probably under attenuated.
Absolutely.
So you should seek out this feedback and find common themes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
If I can do this, Mufasa, to sum it up in after listening to you, it's going to sound a little obvious, but if you're going to go into this profession or any profession,
right,
be a professional.
Yes.
And what that means is all of the things that you've said, Mufasa. You got to know your market. You got to know your craft.
Mm-hmm.
You got to understand your own skill set. You got to understand how to get your product to market in the right way, how to take care of it. Be a professional is all-encompassing.
It is.
Too many people want to stumble into a profession. Oh, all of a sudden, we're all professionals at everything? We're absolutely not.
Right.
I am not a brewer, okay? And I won't pretend to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope you don't either if you're not a brewer.
If you're not a brewer. And this is, be a professional, you're right. It sounds obvious, but you have to understand what that phrase means.
Yeah.
Yes.
Being a professional means that you go in knowing what you're going to do, that you've done your homework.
Right.
That you know the local laws, that you know how many parking spaces you have to have.
Yeah.
That you know that you can't off-sell beer if you don't, it can't off-sell bill. You know that you're in a dry county, or you know that, you know, you can't self-distribute. You need to know all that stuff.
Yeah.
You need to know the demographics of your area. If you don't know the demographics of your area, you're just a lost cause, because you have to target your audience. And, you know, you could have days for millennials and Gen Z. You could have days for boomers, but you need to know what's going on. You need to know who has the money in your area.
Yeah, that's absolutely.
Right? And the competition is not just other breweries. It's tap rooms. It's bars.
That's right. Yeah. It's any, wineries.
It's wineries. It's any place that has an alcoholic beverage in it.
That's
right. Yeah. And so when you say, oh, yeah, there's only one brewery in town. Yeah, but that's not all you're looking at.
Yeah.
How many tap rooms are there?
Yeah.
You know, is there a winery close by? Are there tasting rooms for, you know, are there these like, what's the Bricks? Is that, that's one of those wine places that opened up a little place.
Yep.
You know, you need to know that these are going to be competition. And you have to know what other ancillary items you need to carry to keep your audience solid, because the guy might want to come there, but the girl might not.
Yep.
Or vice versa.
Yep.
Because the guy only drinks Bud Light and she likes, you know, Imperial Stouts. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you have to have your audience keyed in by the beers that you make.
Sure.
And the beers you carry.
There we go. Look, you're going to make mistakes along the way. You're going to learn as you go, and that's part of this process. But if you're going to be a professional, be a professional.
Be a professional. Do the homework.
You know, when you go to your doctor, and without exception, every one of our listeners right now, when you go to your doctor, you expect them to know exactly what they're doing.
Yes.
And you know what? They probably do.
Right.
They spent the time going to school. They spent the time getting educated. Now they've spent the time in practice so that when I go, I trust what I'm doing. If you're going to be a brewer, I want to go into your brewery and trust that you know what you're doing, too.
And unfortunately, we don't have that trust.
That's right.
All right? And it's I like to be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
Sure.
But as more breweries come around, I see that my trust level is starting to go down a bit. You know, but really, the major thing right now is before you do any of this.
Yeah.
Right.
Before you do anything, go intern or work at a brewery.
Yes.
You need to know what it takes to do.
Yep.
Yep. Eyes wide open.
Yeah, like I said, so many people have said to you, this is hard work. How do you do it? It's like, I like doing this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You obviously don't.
Yeah.
Yep.
See ya.
All right. Take Mufasa's advice. I want to thank you for being on the program today.
Yeah. Thank you for having me, because the Brewing Network is, well,
we always have a good time.
Yeah, we always have a good time.
it's always a pleasure.
I plan on being out your way.
Okay.
Before the year ends. And so I will make sure to let you know.
Come see our new studio. You
I
haven't been
come
in there
see
yet.
New studio.
All right. If you want to,
is it air conditioned?
It's air conditioned, Mufasa. Yes, I built it around an air conditioner, literally. So come out and do that with us. If you're an American Homebrewers Association member, I'm pretty sure that you can download the entire presentation that Michael did this week. I'm pretty sure they make that available to members nowadays.
That's right.
So check that out. Thank you again for being on the program.
Oh no, thank you for having me. And John, good to see you, man.
You too.
Always.
Man.
Yep. John and I traveled to South Africa together. It was a fun time.
That was a great trip. Yeah.
Mr. Palmer, I had a good time this week with you.
Yes,
buddy.
You too, man.
Another Homebrewers Conference under our belts.
Yep. Yeah, always good to be here.
All right, we'll see you back home in the studio. And well wishes to Jamil, who will be back on Brew Strong pretty
soon. I really wanted to see Jamil. I haven't seen him for like I don't know how long.
I miss him too. It's been a couple months since I've seen him myself. He's doing all right, but he had to get home for some family stuff. And hopefully he'll be back on a future Brew Strong very, very soon.
Yep, next month.
All
right.
Fantastic. Thank you all
everybody.
For listening.
Thank you. And we'll see you next time. Brew Strong.